just bounding out of the timber when I hit him square in the backbone, halfway down the spine, and my bronze spear went punching clean through. He dropped in the dust, groaning, gasping out his breath. Treading on him, I wrenched my bronze spear from the wound, left it there on the ground, and snapping off some twigs and creepers, twisted a rope about a fathom long. I braided it tight, hand over hand, then lashed the four hocks of that magnificent beast. Loaded round my neck, I lugged him toward the ship, trudging, propped on my spear, no way to sling him over a shoulder, steadying him with one free arm. The kill was so immense. I flung him down by the hull and roused the men, going up to them all with a word to lift their spirits. Listen to me, my comrades, brothers in hardship. We won't go down to the house of death, not yet, not till our day arrives. Up with you, look, there's still some meat and drink in our good ship. Put our minds on food. Why die of hunger here? My hardy urging brought them round at once. Heads came up from cloaks, and there by the barren sea they gazed at the stag, their eyes wide, my noble trophy. But once they'd looked their fill and warmed their hearts, they washed their hands and prepared a splendid meal. Now all day long, till the sun went down, we sat and feasted on sides of meat and seasoned wine. Then when the sun had set and night came on, we lay down and slept at the water's shelving edge. When young dawn with her rose-red fingers shone once more, I called a muster quickly, informing all the crew. Listen to me, my comrades, brothers in hardship. We can't tell east from west, the dawn from the dusk, nor where the sun that lights our lives goes under earth, nor where it rises. We must think of a plan at once, some cunning stroke. I doubt there's one still left. I scaled a commanding crag, and from that height surveyed an entire island, ringed like a crown by endless wastes of sea. But the land itself lies low, and I did see smoke drifting up from its heart through thick brush and woods. My message broke their spirit, as they recalled the gruesome work of the Laestrygonian king Antiphates, and the hearty cannibal Cyclops thirsting for our blood. They burst into cries, wailing, streaming live tears that gained us nothing. What good can come of grief? And so, numbering off my band of men-at-arms into two platoons, I assigned them each a leader. I took one, and Lord Eurylochus the other. We quickly shook lots in a bronze helmet. The lot of brave Eurylochus leapt out first, so he moved off with his 22 comrades, weeping, leaving us behind in tears as well. Deep in the wooded glens they came on Circe's palace, built of dressed stone on a cleared rise of land. Mountain wolves and lions were roaming round the grounds. She'd bewitched them herself, she gave them magic drugs. But they wouldn't attack my men. They just came pawing up around them, fawning, swishing their long tails, eager as hounds that fawn around their master coming home from a feast, who always brings back scraps to calm them down. So they came, nuzzling round my men, lions, wolves, with big powerful claws, and the men cringed in fear at the sight of those strange ferocious beasts. But still they paused at her doors, the nymph with lovely braids, Circe, and deep inside they heard her singing, lifting her spellbinding voice as she glided back and forth at her great immortal loom, her enchanting web, a shimmering glory only goddesses can weave. Polites, captain of armies, took command, the closest, most devoted man I had. Friends, there's someone inside, plying a great loom, and how she sings, enthralling. The whole house is echoing to her song. Goddess or woman, let's call out to her now. So he urged, and the men called out and hailed her. She opened her gleaming doors at once and stepped forth, inviting them all in.